Dit is de CEO-kast in samenwerking met de CEO-brein community. Ik ben Martijn Hoving.
Ik ben Dennis Akkerman.
En ik ben Jeroen Stikkeloren. En tijdens Brighton SEO gaan wij erachter komen, op basis van interviews met internationale en nationale sprekers, waar de CEO-industrie naartoe beweegt. Leuk dat je luistert.
Veel plezier. Yeah, we're sitting on Brighton SEO afternoon with Marco Giordano. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, correct.
Hey, welcome into our podcast. And we always start with, how did you end up in the world of SEO?
Yeah, so I entered because I started with a friend of mine with his website. It was a video game website, a publisher. And they started reading about, for example, Yoast, these topics that were in WordPress. And then I started going once I got more information. And then I actually exited SEO last year when I switched, I pivoted into web data as a whole, or customer data in general, marketing data. But of course, I still do a lot of SEO related things like Search Console and related data, crawl data, log files, and so on.
What did you like about the world of SEO?
Content, planning content, preparing content, all of the operational side operations. Because I think that compared to other channels, maybe excluding PPC, but it's even better. You learn about operations, how to structure a process, how to combine different channels, how to handle content, which is not always the best. Sometimes it's very sloppy, to be honest. But the process per se is very cool because you deal with a lot of data, a lot of stakeholders, decisions. So it's more complex. This complexity I like.
And what do you like about the complexity? What makes you happy about it?
I don't know. I really don't know. I just like it. But for example, if you have some complex problem, when you solve it, you feel more accomplished compared to an easier one. I guess that's why.
And you have a technical perspective on solving those complex issues, or?
Yeah, I'm both technical and non-technical because my background is also in business and this stuff, let's say. And I was doing, I still do a lot of content for myself or in general. So I'm hybrid, let's say. I don't feel like a technical person at all.
No.
But I'm also technical, yeah. By definition, I'm also technical. I'm hybrid in the middle.
So tomorrow you have a talk here at Brighton. Yeah. Can you tell a bit more what are you going to tell?
So it's about content auditing for small and big websites. It just tells you a process, a methodology using the data we're used to, like Search Console and GA4, how to audit websites that are small but also big. And since it's only 20 minutes, of course, it's not much time. I will just go through the process, how to do it, link to some resources, and cover some basics of the difference between, for example, big and small websites. Very briefly, the difference between small and big in terms of which levers you can pull and which you cannot for each category. And that's it, because the rest is pretty much showing the data, the process, and how to do it.
Okay, but I think for our average listener, it might still be a bit too much abacadabra. So if we really peel it down.
Yeah, essentially you have a website, you need to audit the content. You have to say, guys, we need to do this or that with the content. And then you have to plan something. You have to, you know, prepare and update the content over time. You have to manage this content. I show you how. Of course, in 20 minutes, you cannot get the full picture. I just show you the process. I give you the resources, including paid
resources.
Some blog posts I've wrote, my newsletter, and so on. Plus some of my paid product, like my course, that where I go into detail into some particular topics or areas I cover tomorrow because they are too niche or too specific.
Okay, what kind of topics are?
Yeah, for example, BigQuery. It's not hard, actually, but it's deep because you need to know quite some things, how to calculate some metrics, some concepts related to content.
What kind of metrics are we then?
For example, content decay, how to score content decay, how to actually track international cannibalization properly, the algorithm, how it works, all of these topics, and also how to, you know, prepare a solid plan, make something that makes sense for the stakeholders. Like, you need to do this, you need to do that. You need to update the content every X month based on this.
So if you look into content auditing, what are the issues that mostly arise?
Yeah, so it's not, the issues are not about content auditing. The issues are about content because many companies don't care. They just publish content because they just want to publish. And so there is a lot of content debt. Like, there is technical debt, which is where you stack sucks or where you have problems with your technology or with the code you wrote, right? the content is the same. You have a lot of pages that don't bring value from no perspective, like from no channel. They are dead weight and you need to remove them. Or maybe you paid an agency. The work was not great, but you still have these dead weight pages, so you need to improve them. This is the most common problems I notice. In terms of methodology, yeah, okay, there are a lot of issues.
But you are saying, if I move back to that instead of producing more, we should...
You should do both. Because if you want to compete in B2B SaaS, for example, you must produce a lot. You must be very good. You cannot do half and half. Because in B2B SaaS, you compete against everyone. Yeah, you need to have... I don't want to say great content doesn't mean anything, great content. You need to have content that is actually relevant for the user, that solves pain points, that covers target these pain points, but is also relevant for the search engines. I don't recommend only writing for the search engines because in competitive niches, it's very hard to do it nowadays.
So during what you explained, you mentioned some things that I think our listeners would value some more explanation about, like technical depth. What is that?
Well, technical depth, as I told you, is when, for example, you have a legacy solution in your company that is, you know, a roadblock.
Yes.
Blocking your progress, or it stops you from innovating. For example, if you work in a bank, probably you know that in banks, they use COBOL or mainframes because they're old but reliable and no one dares to touch them.
Yeah.
This is legacy. This is partially technical depth. Or for example, when you have an engineer going to a company for 3 years, writing code for a specific function, feature.
Yeah.
No documentation. And the new engineer comes to the company and no one knows.
Okay.
They're like, okay, why do you have this function here? How does it work? Like, what happens if I remove this piece of code and everything breaks?
Yeah.
This is the sort of technical depth I'm talking to.
Okay.
The same goes for content or SEO, for anything.
Yeah.
If it's not documented or done properly.
Okay, clearly explained. And content decay, what?
Yeah, so everything in natural decays, pretty much everything. Content is the same for many reasons, not for Google. It's not about Google, it's about the content per se. Because topics may not be timely, or maybe there is new competition, or maybe there is a new angle on a subject. So you always need to update your content. Always does not mean every week, it means depending on the topic.
How often should we, on average, update our content?
Yes, yeah, absolutely, yes.
But how often? Is it one?
No, there is no. Without the data, there is no answer.
Okay.
But usually, if you're in a traditional B2B niche, for example, you sell, I don't know, roofs.
Yeah.
You sell iron slabs.
Yeah.
These topics are evergreen. It's not like there are huge innovations in the world of iron slabs. So your update time is very low. For example, you can update an article once per year.
Yeah.
For example, once every 6 months, depending on your seasonality and depending on what your data is saying, how you interpret the data. If you are a publisher and you publish an article, for example, best laptops, every 6 to 8 months you have to update it.
Mm.
Because the cycle for the new laptops is like, I don't recall, 8 months, whatever.
Yep.
So these topics have a higher priority, or if you do video game guides, for example, or if you talk about seasonal topics or topics that change every time because of products, like I told you, laptops, phones, cameras, you need to have an higher update time.
Yeah.
Sorry, shorter. But if you have topics that are evergreen or boring, even rocks, like if you have a website about, I'm not joking, I saw a website about rocks.
Yeah.
These websites, I don't think they have any updates. But the problem is that what if a competitor is entering the market with a better angle than you?
Yeah.
And then you need to do something else, no?
And international cannibalization, which you mentioned?
Yeah, this is a topic I cover in all of my products, actually. It's, for example, when it's not in my talk tomorrow, unrelated.
Yeah,
completely related.
But the podcast, it doesn't, yeah. Something still interesting.
For example, if you have a subdomain or a subfolder, whatever, from the UK, and you're ranking in the US with that, it's a problem because people bounce. Yeah. And come on, no American guy is going to click on a British website. Come on, and vice versa. It's like, I don't know, Netherlands and Belgium.
Yeah.
Similar. So these websites may rank in the wrong countries. So I built a solution, something very simple that gets the job done, very simple and quick, to identify and quantify this level of lost clicks based on the SERPs, so that you can actually see which pages and keywords are affecting other countries. You can intervene with hreflang, or maybe you miss the page in that country. Maybe you rank in the US because the American website or subfolder does not have the same page of the UK.
And you can do that at scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Something very simple. It's not comp. It's not anything model stuff. No, no, it's very simple.
It's a lot of stuff you basically analyze manually, but if you automate it and auto-build skill.
You can have a dashboard for that.
Yeah, yeah.
There is some engineering work to do sometimes, depending on your stack, because SEOs don't do engineering. They just tell engineers what to do, and then they choose the modality how to do it, right? And it's the same for me as an analyst. Pretty much the same. I'm an end user in the end. I tell engineers I would like to achieve something, and then we can discuss and do it. But for some of these use cases, you need engineers. You cannot do it alone or learn it yourself. You need actual engineers, especially for enterprise.
All right. And what about marketing data in general? You just in the beginning told that you are working on that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I do. In general, I do Search Console, of course. My first love. GFR, naturally, which I also teach. I mean, the BigQuery side, because...
You like GA4?
The BigQuery.
Okay, yeah, the BigQuery.
The UI is horrible. I can say that it's fucking horrible.
Have you ever met anyone who likes GA4?
No. Terrible. The BigQuery export is also hard, but it's useful.
Yeah.
Useful, but hard. And then, of course, a little bit of Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of, recently, Pardo. A little bit Sprinklr. This enterprise stuff. SAP something. Just something. Crawl data, log files.
Yeah.
And of course, if they have other data as well, just not paid. Paid, I'm still learning, because paid was not my area. And even today, I'm still learning, in the process of learning it. Also because most companies usually struggle and ask me, or agencies, Search Console and GA4 and crawl data.
Yeah.
Of course, if you consider APIs, data for SEO, the usual stuff, no?
Yeah.
Because of pixel ranking, AI overviews, all of this. And also to rank domains, to do a ranking of who's ranking the domains, who they are, what's their searcher, and so on.
Okay. Nice.
In your approach, is there a lot of difference between big sites and small websites?
Yeah, because small websites don't have a brand. They have to play by the rules. They have to be nice guys. Big websites, they don't care. Because if you have backlinks, if you have a brand, you can break a lot of rules and still be fine. I mean, there are many examples in nature. And plus also in terms of strategy, because I also owned some websites. I mean, I still own my own website, of course.
Yeah.
But it's completely different.
Your own website?
SEOtistics.com,
mm-hmm.
Where I cannot be like a big guy and publish mediocre content. You have to be very good. You have to differentiate yourself. And you have to do what it's called in military science, but also in marketing, flanking. You target the flank, the weak spot of your competitor, the big website, because they cannot be everywhere.
No.
The generalists are generalists. They cannot be everywhere. So you attack them where they're weak, in a specific niche, where they don't want to invest resources, so they have to quit, because there is no return for them. So if my niche is a specific side of web analytics, I know the big websites will never come after me, because they don't have the qualifications, or the authority, or the resources. If you know what I mean, they are slow. The elephant in the room, they are super slow, like enterprise companies. If you're an enterprise company, though, you do have the brand, you can break a lot of rules, and you have more resources. The issue is that you lose in bureaucracy, flexibility, and of course, innovation, because usually these companies are the status quo, so that they're not innovating technically. They are the status quo. They are the current metagame, let's say.
Yeah. That's quite a difference. Okay, we always ask our guest a question. What has been your biggest fuck up in it can be in SEO, but can also be in data. It
can also be in data, yeah.
No, SEO is fine. No, SEO is fine.
Okay.
The biggest fuck up. Let me see, because okay. Once, it's not really SEO, but it's strongly related to SEO. There was a website I was managing that was down. It was not for a company, it was for a friend of mine. It was down and the technician was not solving it, or we had to wait. So I opened Nginx myself and I was trying to fix it. And I was lucky because I didn't delete the entire database, because it was in WordPress, so I could delete everything. Nothing happened, but it was this close to fuck it up. I was this close. And another time, I think, maybe something with indexing. with staging websites, the usual boring stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe, or RoboSticks. No, RoboSticks-T, I never got wrong. It was something with indexing on a staging website.
You say next to entire staging website.
Yeah, yeah, it was not that. It, no one
not
cared.
A big problem.
Yeah, no one cared, but it's still a fun.
Only the SEO specialist.
Yeah, yeah, but no one... They don't bother the visibility of the rankings of the website. Luckily, it was luckily, but it happened, yeah.
Nice. All right.
Good one. So thanks a lot for being
here. No problem, guys.
Yeah. Podcast, good luck with your talk tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yeah, have fun. Thanks.
Have fun.
It was a pleasure, guys. Yeah. See you. You.